KBFT Houston.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM for Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawan hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Scene.
Chaliye aaj hum sab mil kar ke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發, 我們是侯斯頓的 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hain Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن نوجد السلام.
You are listening to the smooth dulcimer tones of 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
This very musical edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM.
Bring on the dulcimers.
They're very spooky instruments, and it's Halloween.
Dulcimers.
Yes, they scare me.
You must not like Renaissance festivals.
I've never been to one.
That's how scared he is. There are dulcimers there. Well, they actually fired all the good dulcimer players. All right, so welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's... Yay, Groove House. All right, well, welcome to the Halloween episode of Technology Bites. Who is the count from Second City TV?
Who watched Second City TV?
I watched Second City TV. TV was good. That was funny. That's where you got John Candy from.
That's where we got Michael Richards
that's
from.
That's where you got, what's his name, from two of the Ghostbusters.
Huh.
One Ghostbuster.
Ernie Hudson and someone else.
The guy who, guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He is from Second City TV.
Joe Flaherty? Is that a person?
Joe Flaherty played the Count. Vampire. What was the vampire's name?
Oh. Count Floyd.
Count Floyd, yes. I saw Count Floyd intro'd Rush when they came to town in like the 70s.
Wow.
And Count Floyd showed up on the big screen. He says, "This band is so scary. Ooh."
Rick Moranis? Is that
who? Rick Moranis is who I'm thinking of, yes. So it's Second City Trivia Night here on Technology. I was driving through town. I heard this radio show about Canadian comedy shows. Yeah, Second City TV was awesome. It was. As Saturday Night Live went into deep decline, Second City TV picked up the slack.
A little more cutting edge.
It was. You had Bob and Doug McKenzie from Second City TV.
Yeah. And you had to be committed because it was on at like 1 o'clock in the morning is when it started.
Yeah, it was a late show. You had to get through. So Saturday Night Live was good. It was a reasonable prime time for young people in the 70s. It's at 10 p.m. And
so
then
Second City was Canadian?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Second City is a Canadian comedy troupe.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know. I thought it was out of Chicago or something.
That's why there's a lot of Canadian-based humor in there, like the Farm Report and things like that. Back Bacon, Bob and Doug.
Yeah, Chicago was SNL, right? It's like not ready for primetime.
No.
Whatever.
New York was SNL.
New York.
What was in Chicago then? Laugh something?
Laugh In?
Laugh Stop. Laugh Stop.
I don't know.
There's something in Chicago.
There was Second City there, too, but I don't think they were connected.
That's where I'm getting mixed up.
It is. Second City's in Chicago.
There's a lot of Canadian stuff.
And Toronto.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, A.
A.
Special Halloween edition, A.
Get
out the really glad you could tune in, eh? We got a Halloween show. It's really scary. Got Count Floyd, eh?
Ooh. Total Canadian Halloween show, eh? It's all about Halloween.
Boot.
The question is, with this, unfortunately, is, are you doing the guy I'm blanking on it now. I just blanked out. Strange Brew.
Strange Brew,
McKenzie
yeah.
Brothers. Or are you doing from Wayne's World? Because that guy totally ripped off that character.
Oh, no.
To do Garth.
The reason why the confusion is there, the first one, Second City, was in Chicago. The second one opened in Toronto, and it was the Toronto cast
that did the show.
The SCTV.
Gotcha. I knew there was some Chicago connection there.
Yeah. You don't even watch Second City TV.
I vaguely remember.
John Candy.
I think I remember Fridays more.
Yeah, I used to watch Fridays. But that was a bunch of pot jokes all the time.
Oh, Fridays. That was
where Michael Richards came from.
That was like the Jamaican chef that asked how they were going to bake everything. and he would ask a question, and he would go, "No, no, no, no." And then he eventually gave, say, "Do we smoke it?" Whether it was a turkey or whatever it was he was making. Because he would always, like, he had a turkey stuffed it with ganja.
Was it Fridays where the actor who played Kramer came from?
Yes. Michael Richards.
And it's also the one where the guy from Man in the Moon.
Andy Kaufman
was the guest host, and he didn't tell anybody that he was going to just not participate in the skit that he was supposed to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And Big actually, ruckus. He made
Michael Richards
really, really mad, and then threw water on him, and there was a fight almost, and then
They cut to the commercial,
and I guess he had told the producer that he was going to do it. So at the end, the producer's like, "Oh, don't worry about it. This is planned. It's no big deal. When he comes back from break, he's going to explain everything." And then when they came back from break, he said, "I'm supposed to apologize because they're making me do this. The director told me I had to apologize." So he got the director. He got everybody.
He was crazy like that.
Yeah, he. I think he would be really
Andy
annoying
Kaufman
to be
was
around.
The only one who got Andy
See,
Kaufman.
That's the, I think he would be really annoying to be around, but it'd be really cool to be him.
What the hell? What do you got there? I have no idea.
Sounds like you're watching a baseball
game. It's a baseball
game.
Are you watching surface? World Series?
Is your Surface thing going crazy in there?
Oh, no. It was the SCTV site suddenly started playing in auto mode.
I hate autoplay on websites.
So I really liked Andy Kaufman, but I think he probably would have been annoying to be around.
Huh, says
but,
you.
But...
You're annoying to be around.
Yeah, I know. I've been told that I actually am somewhat similar to Andy Kaufman.
More annoying than Kaufman. Oh, yeah?
Because
oh,
wow. I really don't care if other people get my jokes. As long as I think it's funny, I'm fine with that.
You're more of the Lipton character. Was it Tony? What?
Clifton.
Clifton.
Tony Clifton.
Tony Clifton. I don't sing lounge songs, though.
I was driving through Houston, and there was this great radio show about old comedy stuff.
I've got a tech horror story.
A tech horror story. Okay, well, let me give out the vital stats here. You're listening to Technology Bites. We have a website, geekradio.com. We're hanging out on IRC and the channel Tech Bites. If you join the server, irc.cuckoo.com, or you can go to the website, and we have an IRC Java client there that'll just join you right to the channel if you want to participate that way. Also, before I forget, we did do a fundraiser the last couple of weeks, and the first week was kind of painful, and then the second week we did really well, but then later we found out we did even better than we thought. So
yeah, it was the worst then best again pledge drive that we've
ever
done.
But we had got some people we need to thank from the web or the answering service that we didn't get a chance to thank last week. So we want to thank Mark from Katie, who pledged a very generous pledge amount. Ilya was a returning member, pledged on the web. John from Houston also pledged on the web, says thanks for all you do. And Dolores, who's a new member, pledged on the web. So our total was off the charts. I tweeted that out to Dwight. I can't remember how much what the whole
$3,400 in that one night.
In that one night,
wow.
Yeah, which was, and our goal was like $1,700 or $1,900. So we
$1,700.
So Groovehouse's idea of going to the old traditional phones was probably the best idea of the night. And we want to thank everybody who called or got on the web or got on the internet or walked in and pledged or donated money during the fundraiser. We did really well. I do want to remind you that, making the pledge is half the battle. Unless you put it on a credit card, then it's the whole battle. But if you just pledged but you didn't give us plastic or a means to deduct the money from your account, we really encourage you to make sure you make those payments when you get your reminders in the mail. I was looking at some numbers from this year so far on the fundraiser, and our actual returns on the amount that were pledged in the previous fundraisers is a little low, like just over 50%. So we really need, and in the past we've averaged 80-90% fulfillment during the fundraiser, which is great. It'd be better if it was 100, but if you made the commitment, please follow through by making the payments and pledging your support to, when you pledge your support, pay your support to Technology Bites and KPFT. So tonight's Halloween.
Whoa.
I'm not, in 3D.
So this is going to be the scariest radio show you ever heard, because I don't know why.
We're only taking Windows Vista questions.
It's always scary.
No, we're only taking Windows 8 questions.
No,
yes, we're taking a whole new interface. When I ask a question, you have to up slide back click.
I know if people want to find out where the settings are in Windows 8, I can tell them. I figured that out tonight. So we can answer that question for you. I'm not going to tell you now because it'll spoil the surprise.
The treat. It'll spoil the treat.
So, So if you're, hopefully you're, if you have your house open to trick-or-treaters tonight and you don't have any spooky music to play, just turn Technology Bites up really loud. It'll scare the neighbor kids and kind of set the Halloween mood for them. But Flicted has mentioned that he has a scary Halloween tech story.
Didn't we mention that we have a geek gathering?
Oh, yeah, we have a geek gathering. It's not this weekend.
Did you put Twix in your USB port
next
again?
Next weekend.
No.
It's not Friday?
Oh, it's Friday.
It is Friday.
This Friday.
Oh, it's next Friday.
First Friday of the month.
Yes, you're right.
Friday, the last night of the month.
Okay, no, I thought we were, there's more days. Right, today's the 31st. That's Friday.
The traditional October 32nd and 33rd.
Yes, well, you know, it's not a leap year. I get it. So, yes, it's Friday. You're right. Thank you, Dwight.
I like October 32nd.
I like October 32nd and Smarch. March.
So where is it?
It's on the website.
No, where is it?
Dwight?
It's at Cones.
Okay, I still don't know how to pronounce
Cones.
Cohen's.
Oh, Dwight feels right at home.
Cohen's.
That's why he feels so at home there.
Dwight's just happy because they've got beer and wine.
And sometimes free food. And free snacks.
Huh? And sometimes free snacks.
Yeah. Are you sure it's not, instead of Jewish, maybe it's Spanish? And it's Cajones?
That's how we ought to pronounce it.
Come to Cajones. Do you have the balls to come to Cajones? Yeah, so the Geek Gathering is this Friday, and we're doing it at Cons. It's KHON'S. And the information is on the website at geekradio.com. If you want to comment, we're also posting information on Facebook. All right, the dog. That scary dog.
That's Frank and Weenie.
Frank and Weenie's going to bite you. All right. So, yeah, so the Geek Gathering, and I'm guessing the weather might be pretty good. It's
supposed to be. No rain.
So that's good. And you can come and bring all your leftover Halloween treats to the Geek Gathering.
Your leftover Dia de los Muertes stuff. Bring your skulls.
Bring your rotten pumpkins. No, not really. All right, so Flicted. Now that we've built all this up.
If people want to like a visual to go along with it, they can hit up the Facebook page and see Flicted. That's pretty strong.
If you go to Facebook.com/Geek Radio, that's our Facebook page, and there is a picture of Flicted and how he looked when he arrived at the radio station tonight.
Literally scared
the bejesus out of everyone here. There's not a clean pair of pants in the house. Now your scary tech story, or did I trump it?
Mine are still clean.
I don't know. It could be pretty scary.
Could it be?
Yeah.
I have high hopes, high expectations.
I have to try to work it into a horror story, but I might
be very spooky music to play behind it.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be brilliant. I don't think I do. I tried to search online, but everything was like real short little things.
That's not that scary. That's more hip.
So,
boom, boom.
I was at my parents.
Boom, boom, boom.
Because my mother has said that.
You don't come visit enough. You need to come visit more.
Oh, it's going to be radio theater now.
So on her computer, she claimed that whenever she hooked her computer up to her Linksys, she bought a Cisco router. So instead of hooking it straight into the DSL modem, you know, you're supposed to hook it from the DSL modem to the router and then the router to the computer. I told her to do that. And she said, whenever I do that, the sound on my computer goes out. That doesn't seem real reasonable.
Scary, though.
That's good. So when I was there, she happened to mention it again, and I was like, okay, I can look at it. And she's like, no, I did it again. The sound goes out on my computer. And I was like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you're disconnecting something. Something's happening. So I look at it. I take it apart.
You took the computer apart?
I took the DSL modem and I put it all back together.
That was scary.
And I went and the internet connection worked. I pulled up Google. Everything was fine. So I'm like, well, I'll pull up YouTube. I'll play a video. No sound. I was like, she was like, see, I told you. And I was like, well, how do you know if the sound's working? There's no light or anything. So I took it, and she said, that's just the way it works. That's what happens. So I was like, yeah, I think you don't know what you're talking about. So I unplugged it from the Cisco, the Ethernet, that's it. Unplugged it, plugged it back into the DSL modem, and the sound worked. So this is not This is odd. It's right? Scary. So...
Hold me.
I like pull the computer and I'm like trying to trace cables and I'm looking at everything and the jack's plugged in. The sound for the sound is plugged in where it should be. So I ask her for some headphones. She finally finds some headphones. I plug them into the front. It's playing sound. I'm like, so the computer's playing sound. I plug it into the back. Computer's playing sound out of audio out. So there's something's wrong with the speakers or something. But I can't figure out what. So finally, I'm trying to trace it. I see they're like powered USB powered speakers, and so I'm like, well, I'm gonna just disconnect this. I'm gonna use a different cable. So I flip it back, and I find that the cable that's hooked up to the Ethernet has two heads.
It's got a hook,
and the other one is USB. It's a two-headed monstrosity cable that's on one end is Ethernet, and on the other end is Ethernet and USB.
Really?
Yeah. And so whenever I would hook the Ethernet side into the Linksys, it would somehow short USB, and the USB speakers would stop having power. So as soon as I pulled that USB and just let the Ethernet part do its Ethernet part, everything worked fine.
How is such a cable possible? Was it created in some kind of laboratory?
It was a Franken cable.
And that's when Igor came in with his hunchback and said, I need my cable back.
It's an abnormal cable.
And he pulled the cover off the USB side of the cable, and it was old man Jenkins.
You meddling kids.
And your loud music.
And your stupid talking dog.
So I guess the thing is, I guess...
I would never have thought to look for a USB to Ethernet.
USB and Ethernet.
And Ethernet split.
Split and down, back down into one cable, and then the other end only Ethernet.
What was the cable for?
Now, this is the thing. I'm pretty sure that that cable was a custom-built cable that came with the DSL modem that Verizon uses in that area. And so I think, I'm assuming that...
Because they would make their modems are USB capable.
So I'm assuming that the... basically, Ethernet has eight wires, but it only uses four. And so I'm guessing they wired the USB into the other four wires. And so on the DSL modem side, when you plug the Ethernet in, it knew, take these four cables and use Ethernet and take the other four and do something with USB with them in the device. But if you don't have that device there and you just have a regular, you know, Ethernet jack, evidently it shorts those other four wires, which shorts USB and makes USB stop working.
But you just unplugged the USB.
So I just unplugged the USB and everything worked fine.
So your mother saw the cable with the two heads, said this one goes here and this one goes there.
What needed to happen, I think, for the Westel modem, because I'm guessing maybe it gave you... like a program that gave you administrative level access to the DSL modem to change your settings or something. I'm really not sure why it was there, but I'm pretty sure it came with the DSL modem.
Nature cannot explain why this exists.
It's a monstrosity.
We cannot prove that this exists, but Flicted has seen it with his own two eyes and the horror that it wreaks upon your sound system and network.
As a computer guy, I've seen a lot of things, but
I've been around the world a few times. I've seen some pretty amazing things, but this was so unearthly and horrible.
It chilled me to my tech bones.
You got a tech bone from it.
Anyway, so it was odd.
That was a good story.
That was scary.
I'm frightened.
I'm scared.
I will never look at Ethernet the same way. Just when you thought it was safe to go back on the network. All right, so it is our Halloween episode. I don't know what that means necessarily.
It means we don't have any candy in here.
But we have. We are. Not, oh, wait a second. Trick or treat. Should I not look?
Only one, please, sir.
Ooh. I got a tube of chocolate.
A Pocky?
Tube of chocolate.
Oh, no Pocky. Sorry, Peter.
Ooh, it's ghost poop.
Pass that around. Fluff.
Ethernet turds. All right. Thank you. So we have candy for Halloween. All right. So I know that, you know, we're back to our normal show on an abnormal night. So it's going to hopefully be a little bit more fun than usual. At least it's not fundraiser, right? Right? Am I right?
Yes.
Right. So I know that Pete probably has a new segment for us. So we're going to go now to the San Antonio hub of our network. It's USB in San Antonio to our Ethernet here in Houston. And do the Technology Bites Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
And when they turned the monitor on, it had Windows 8. No, anyways. Yeah, talk about perfect timing to be totally covered up by Hurricane Sandy and presidential election news and all that. Windows 8 has been released, so that's out there. I think, you know, Dwight has finally has some review equipment, so we can certainly wait and hear what he has to say. I have seen the displays, and, you know, they want like $60 or $70, so it's, at least they're not kind of nailing you on the, and the upgrade was the same price as the just buy it from scratch package. So there's that if you're interested. And speaking of Hurricane Sandy, the interesting thing with that is that when something like this happens, you get a chance. So certain people who keep track of this stuff get to make some surprisingly interesting observations about how the internet holds up. The folks at Research Renesis, which monitors the overall health of the internet by watching which networks are up and which are down, watched during Sandy. Obviously, there's been a lot of activity in their world for the past couple of days as Hurricane Sandy rumbled through the area, flooding data centers and central offices in Manhattan, among other things. They did go through and map out how much was affected. They have a map on the article, which doesn't work great for radio, but basically they do it where if it's green on the map, it indicates that more than 99.95% of networks in a given area are running, and then it had some areas of red in the places where you would expect that indicate that more than 5% of the networks have been knocked down. So when you consider how dense Lower Manhattan, New Jersey, Connecticut, Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island and all that, it's pretty jarring to see how much internet did get knocked offline. Renesis concludes that about 10% of the networks in the New York metro area went down, which is pretty low given that the electric company cut off power to the lower portions of Manhattan where a lot of those networks are based. So it says something good about the planning of those whose networks stayed up and running. Although if you look, there are a whole lot of places, a lot of sites that are on their backup piece because their data center was in Manhattan. Nice, a clever idea, right? I would think that if you're gonna, I don't know, if for me, a data center doesn't have to be in the same city as me to be workable, and I actually sort of prefer if it's not in one of these places that, you know, with a server. I don't know about you, but it's kind of like, it just seems to me like given every movie has New York under attack and now we have Sandy going for real, that that maybe having your data center for your big important international website in that area is not the best idea. But that's me. They don't ask. Here's an interesting thing for the future. Now, looking way ahead now, if our internet all stays up and so on, there's a new Juniper study about wearable computing. You know, wearable is, wearable is the new tablet computing. Remember, people talked about tablet computing for a long time before it actually became a usable, workable thing, and then suddenly got adopted pretty fast. Juniper thinks that smartwatches, wearable fitness gizmos, and head-mounted displays will bring in $1.5 billion by 2014. In other words, within 2 years, that it will be over a billion-dollar business. So that could be fascinating. It identifies 2014 as the watershed year for wearable device sector. Juniper believes wearable computing industry will see revenue of $800 million this year. So basically, they're talking about it doubling. It's worth noting that their definition of wearable computing includes both emerging technology like Google's Project Glass, as well as more established smartwatches and wearable health and fitness gizmos. Let's see. The report also mentions wearing wearable computing devices worn by soldiers in combat, but didn't include them in the revenue forecast, likely because you're not going to find them on the shelves of a store anytime soon. The interesting, so the question, of course, so this says there's going to be market, and that's what they think. But the big question remains, how will consumers actually use wearable computing in the future? It's especially interesting when it comes to devices like glass, which could lead to a whole new generation of localized augmented media, as well as a new wave of apps that come with close ties to the real world. Here's my guess. Right after Microsoft really nails and really figures out that they've got it on the tablet world, that they know what to do now, next, and they get it all built up and they take a long time, like 2 years from now, really ramp up the perfect final tablet, then wearable computing will hit it big and it'll be obsolete. That's just my guess. In other news, this one's interesting, an iPad mini feature that nobody had talked about before. This will be the first iOS device, the Mini, that has stereo speakers. It appears that Apple's move to the smaller Lightning dock connector has left enough space for the second speaker along the bottom edge of the device, although the company elected not to make a similar addition to the fourth generation iPad. There were speculation about iPad mini speaker setup ever since early case designs leaked showing two sets of small holes, one on each side of the port. Similar setups have been seen on iPhone models with one side housing a speaker and the other side that had a microphone. iPad models, however, until now, only had a single off-center grill. Apple did little to clear up speculation at the introduction last week, making no mention of stereo speakers and using a singular speaker on its tech specs page. As people started getting their iPad mini review copies, they figured out that it is stereo. Somebody, 9to5 Mac Reader, emailed Apple marketing chief Phil Schiller to ask about it, and Schiller responded simply, "It is stereo." Like the direct point thing. So there's that. So if you were wondering, but maybe you're thinking the price might be a little high on the iPad mini. We haven't had that much chance to talk about it on the show and all, but the base one comes at $329, and if you want to get one that's enabled for cellular, cellular modem type one, cellular internet, then that's like another, that's seriously more expensive. Now, it does use LTE, but it starts putting you up into the near $500 range to get I think the fairly basic one. So, in another story that happened during the whole Sandy foofra, Google refreshed their Nexus line. The Nexus 7 has some new specs on it. They're releasing a Nexus 10 to compete directly with the full-on iPad, and they also announced the Nexus 4, their next smartphone. The 16-gig Nexus 7 is now taking center stage in Google's Play Store with $199. For the 16-gig Nexus Wi-Fi only. If you want to go to 32 gigs, then that's about $250, and it is listed as in stock, at least as of last I checked. So what if you want something with a cellular network? That one's not listed as in stock, but it is coming soon, and the price, it's a GSM-enabled 32-gig model, and it's priced at $299. So now you've got an interesting kind of tougher choice. The iPad mini 16-gig with Wi-Fi is $30 more than the 32-gig Nexus 7 with cellular modem, but it's not LTE. It's the basically 3G internet on the Nexus, and that's also on the Nexus 4 smartphone. It's not LTE, and that was the biggest. In hearing sounds of disappointment surrounding the Nexus announcement, I think that was the biggest source of it. I think there are also that, you know, the Nexus 4 smartphone is coming soon. So is the Nexus 10 tablet. If you are interested in more specifics on those, they are there are some hands-on out there. You can find them at the usual kind of tech places. The big things, the Nexus 10, to start with the big one, comes in a 16 gig and a 32 gig size. It's got a 5 megapixel camera. Obviously, it runs Android. I don't see any other dramatically interesting specs on it. Yeah, it has 10.1 inch screen, just like it's 300 pixels per inch as far as the screen density goes, and the screen resolution is 2560 by 1600. I don't remember how that compares to. That's not Retina, but it ain't bad. And 300 pixels per inch is pretty tight. See anything else that's just basically looking at the specs. The articles kind of came and went pretty fast on this stuff because they got pushed out by weather and Windows 8. That was the thing. They announced this. They went in and announced it. It was supposed to be announced in New York, I believe. And then they still announced it, but it's been kind of covered up by other stuff. The price, it's for the base Nexus 10. So that's the competitor, and it's made by Samsung, the competitor with the base iPad, not just the mini. Not really the mini. It's $399. So that's a good $100 cheaper than the kind of roughly equivalent, Mac Mini. Obviously they can't seem to get as much of a price advantage on the Nexus 10 as they could on the Nexus 7. Let's see, on the Nexus 4, it's an 8 gig phone. It should be released on the 13th of November, and you can look at more on that. And like you said, the Nexus 7 is the one that's really shipping. There are, if you're looking, there's some discounts for if you look, some of the old ones are cheaper if you're just wanting to pick up a kind of screaming deal. They do now have, so they've got the 8 gigs, I believe, has just kind of disappeared. Now the minimum size is 16 gigs, and then you can get a 32 gig or a 32 gig cellular, and it's all from $200 to $300. And that's the news.
All right. So on our Facebook page, Carl Guderian from the Netherlands shared a Halloween tech horror story, which I will try to read and do justice to. This harkens back to the days of Radiodrome. A friend of a friend at another ISP tells me they had a customer, let's call them Yo-Yo Dine, who had an IP telephony solution that in the end wasn't. Every so often, the system would call people at random and a voice would relate gossip about some executive or another. Gossip nobody could possibly know. During telepresence sessions, people on the other end would report figures flitting about in the background. But those figures were people who had left the company long ago under a cloud or under really sinister circumstances. The last straw was when every single employee's phone rang, and anyone who picked up was regaled with a catalog of the CEO's every peccadillo, from assassinations in every major port to Swiss bank account numbers. That's when the group in charge of the IP telephony call manager was ordered to pull the plug. When some hapless engineer was ordered to log on to the CM and call up the GUI with the CEO, CTO, and CIO standing by, the splash screen displayed only one image. A bloody hook. Yes. That would have been better with some, you know, mood music behind it, but the Claw would have appreciated that. All right, so I don't know what else to say after that. I'm scared.
What else can you say?
All right, so we're going to go to the phones. It looks like we got some calls in the queue. We're actually going to take tech calls and horror stories. So you can scare us with a problem or scare us with something scary. Your problem might actually be scary. Although it'll be tough to top that two-headed Ethernet cable.
If we can get some Windows 8 questions, we can help them tonight. So.
Dwight has a Windows 8 Surface with him.
Yeah, the Microsoft Surface. I like it a lot. I'll have it at the Geek Gatherings if you haven't seen one. And I think someone else, Jeff Kabuli, who often comes to the Geek Gathering, has bought one as well. So I think we might see that. But it's a pretty nice device. It is... I've been playing with Windows 8 on other tablets and on desktops, but I like it best on this. But it's kind of Windows 8 light because you can't install any of the legacy desktop Windows applications on the desktop here because it's ARM. All you get is what came with it. That's it. But all the Metro stuff works pretty well. I like it. We had fun watching Jay and Flicted try to figure out how to get to the settings on it, which isn't immediately intuitive if you've not used Windows 8. It's even more interesting if you're...
Unlike people who've had extensive experience with it.
Because there have been betas out for about a year and a half.
Yeah, but that's a small percentage of the population. The majority of people are going to be in the same boat that Flicked and I were in, leaking and with lots of questions. That boat. All right. Yeah, but it's interesting. I kind of like it. You know, I was telling Dwight that... It's a jump away. I mean, the whole interface obviously is just a complete redo of the Windows operating system. But having been a tablet user now for over a year, and it has some intuition to it. You kind of know what questions you want to ask about how is this going to work and what's it going to do. But it's a little muddling around.
One of the most interesting things I read about it from people who've had this say that. They're really pushing the smart cover, which is they call it the touch cover, which has a keyboard inlay inside of it, slightly raised, and you can actually type on it. And it's pretty typable. It isn't really like an iPad killer so much as it may be a laptop killer.
Yeah. It brings the laptop and the tablet together really well, I think, so far, my limited experience with it. The keyboard's a nice touch. Just to, basically, if you can imagine the smart cover on your iPad, if you plopped it down and it was a keyboard,
right?
It's and there's a little built-in stand. And I saw the tests on that stand. That stand is pretty durable. You have to actually really lean into it
to break it.
Yeah. So that stand looks like it's pretty. It's pretty.
It survived Flicked. Pre-show Flicked.
That's right. He was banging on it, doing
some hard poking on there.
If an electronic device has to survive anything, I would suspect that it'd be you. Barrett.
Exactly.
I held it, and it still exists.
Yeah. The keys don't come off, so you're going to have an O key forever.
You can spill stuff on there too, can't you? Is that impervious to Diet Coke?
I don't know.
But you would lose the whole keyboard in this.
Yeah, I would lose the whole thing. That's borderline too small to hang on to.
Borderline. All right. So
you'd probably wash it.
Never mind.
You think it's washable?
I don't know. It's
The new washable computers. That's going to go with the wearable computers that Pete was talking about earlier.
The other thing I've seen someone said about this keyboard was this is the kind of thing that Apple should have done with its smart cover.
That smacks of almost like an Apple cover. That is what they should have on the inside of theirs. That would have been pretty awesome, actually.
Yes.
Yep. Wow.
Do you think a cat could use that?
A cat? Absolutely.
Meow. Like, you know, get one of those little apps that's a koi pond, and the cat could swat at the pond, the fish in the pond. Meow. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
I see that you have done your job tonight and screened some calls.
I have.
All right, who's up?
Up first on the Halloween show, we're going to speak with Ivan.
Ivan!
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
Yeah, man, I have a question. I have a Toshiba satellite, and I haven't used it in a while. And I installed Windows XP on it, and then I got into the BIOS and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I typed in a password, and now I can't remember the password. So every time I turn my computer on, I see like a blue screen, and it's asking me for my password.
So you got a BIOS password set, and you don't know what it is?
I can't remember what it is, man. I tried everything that I could, like the passwords that I have used in the past, but I don't know, man. I don't know what the heck, man. I totally messed up.
No idea what I'm mistaking or doing there. All right, so with a BIOS password, who makes the computer?
Toshiba.
Is it a laptop?
Yes.
It's going to be a little tougher to get past that one, because with a desktop computer, there's usually a jumper where you can short out the CMOS battery,
mm-hmm.
and that will reset the BIOS back to defaults and erase the password. So what I don't know how to do that on a Toshiba laptop. If you can access the BIOS battery, uh-huh. you can pull the battery and then put the battery back, and that should reset everything. So I would get online and start searching for Toshiba reset BIOS or let's see.
Even if I put in like the XP, like the Windows XP.
It won't matter if this is a BIOS password. Now, I'm assuming, based on what you're telling me, it's a BIOS password.
Yeah, it's a BIOS password.
It's not the Windows password. This is the hardware password.
Yeah, it's just a BIOS password, so I don't know what the heck, you know.
Yeah, the problem is the BIOS password gets asked before you get to the hard drive.
Right, yeah.
So you can't install a new OS or anything.
Right, yeah. So I have to just open it up and find, like, the battery thing, like the BIOS.
Yeah, what I would get on, do you know what model it is?
It's, let me check right now. It's, just hold down for a second.
Well, what I would do is I would go online and start searching for reset BIOS Toshiba and then put in your model number. I've seen a number of videos that talk about how to do it with different Toshibas,
mm-hmm.
but it'll give you an idea. And basically, you just want to find one that's specific to your model.
Oh, okay.
Or like replace BIOS battery or reset BIOS Toshiba and then your model number and see if you can find some instructions on how to get in there, because that's the only way you're going to get it done.
Okay. All right.
I mean, there might be some super secret Toshiba backdoor password, but I don't think Toshiba will share that with you.
Because I even have the the recovery disk. But
again, that's not going to make any difference, right? Because it's a hardware password that's coming up before the operating system even loads.
It's before the CD gets read. It's before the hard drive gets read. It's before anything
could happen.
Right. You don't have any means to get past it unless you either lobotomize the hardware or you remember the password.
All right, dude. All right, well, you have a good Halloween and boo.
Scary.
Thank you for your call. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, that's that's scary when you can't get into your computer because you set a BIOS password and you don't know what it is. But
especially when it's a laptop.
I would think that most people would set, when knowing what that is, presuming they know what that is, you that's one you remember.
Yeah, but apparently you'd be wrong because that last call contradicts your belief. And it's not the first time I've heard of that.
I know. It mystifies me when I
Well, what happens is that people get...
They're drunk when they said it.
I was about to offer that up. Yeah, they come home late at night, you know.
No, they've entered into BIOS. And they feel kind of empowered. And they go, ooh, look, I have a way to secure my computer. I'm going to type in a password. I want a password. I want to protect the heck out of this thing. I've protected it so good, I can't even get into it.
What's a password they never use? That's the thing. You use your Windows login password on a daily basis or whatever shell accounts you have. But that's the BIOS password. You use that once every handful of months, maybe.
Well, I mean, if I was going to set a password, why wouldn't I set a password to, like, one that I use? Like, you know, most people, when they are asked for a password, they type in the same password for their bank, for their email, for everything. It's the same. They just use that same password. So the idea that somebody would set it and not know what it is a little mystifying. But on top of that, it could be that because if it's an older computer, maybe he typed something, but one of the keys was dead. And it didn't register all the keystrokes, so he might have typed in, let's say poodle, but it didn't register the D, so it's actually pool or something. It's feasible. I've seen it. I've had to have people type passwords or, you know, go on, to bring up a notepad and type the alphabet. Let's make sure you're getting all your keys or registering, because that can happen. Or maybe the alt key was stuck or something.
However, if he was drunk when he set the password,
he could get drunk again and maybe he'd remember it.
Drunk again, because, yeah, he'd be more likely to remember it.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't think so. All right. Dwight's got some zombie humor. Zombie humor. So how about that Walking Dead?
Oh. I didn't watch this last episode yet.
Yeah. There were zombies.
Spoiler alert.
Now I don't even need to watch it.
Next you're going to say they make really poor decisions throughout the entire episode.
Well, that could be that motorcycle show as well.
Sons of Anarchy.
I actually started watching that. Uneducated people make horrible decisions with mystifying and dumbfounding consequences.
Just spread to Disney now that they bought this film.
Yeah, Disney and Lucasfilm.
So you can watch movie executives make increasingly poor decisions.
J-A-R-J-A-R-B-I-N-K-S.
Yes, Jar Jar will be in the new movie.
How do people feel about that?
How do we feel?
Yeah. Like, what's your take on...
George Lucas wasn't going to live forever.
No!
But what was your...
Worse than him for the next...
If you think about it, for a few minutes, it just makes total sense, because Disney has bought or licensed or copyrighted all of American folklore. If you think about it, like your Cinderella stories, your Beauty and the Beast, all of the, you know, Americana tales.
European folklore.
European.
Isn't it?
Well, some of it's American, some of it's European. Yeah, they own what everybody's grown up with is the fairy tales.
Right.
And Star Wars, for all intents and purposes, is a fairy tale for its own age. You know, it's such a part of our culture. It's such a part of a specific subsect of human culture. It figures that Disney would ultimately own it. I don't know that I necessarily like that.
Well, Disney.
Disney.
Disney. Dismal.
Disney has gone on a tear. They own Marvel, right?
They bought Marvel. Yep.
ESPN.
ESPN. They're part owners of ESPN.
ABC.
Mm-hmm. They own, but recently they bought, what else? They bought one other, Pixar.
Pixar's supposed to be branching away, aren't they, after they've fulfilled a certain number of license of movies that Pixar has.
I don't think so. I think they bought it outright.
Did they?
I thought they bought it outright.
So, they own a lot of intellectual property that has some big bucks attached.
But in addition to getting you know, Pixar, Star Wars.
Buying Pixar, though, that was basically bailing Disney out from having no ideas, because Pixar knows how to make good movies, and Disney apparently forgot.
Well, in addition to getting the Star Wars franchise, right, they're also getting Skywalker Sound and Industrial Light and Magic.
ILM, yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting some other things, which could be good. They're getting Indiana Jones.
Yep, Raiders.
I mean, so I'm mixed on it, because on one side, I think Lucas has had some good ideas, and then he just spent years destroying them. and so to get them away from him could be very good, because I think there's really nice stuff that could come out of it, and if in the hands of right people, it's got as good a shot of being better than leaving it with Lucas. Right?
I think it'll be a lot better, especially if they can like incorporate song and dance into it, and as long as Han sings first.
Did you see the picture I created for the Technology Bites Facebook page with Darth Vader?
No.
I'm personally looking forward to the Jar Jar Binks cameo in the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
The thing that bothers me, I mean, Lucas was very aggressive with his lawyers, but Disney is like the empire of the system. I mean, they are evil, and so that kind of worries me, because now they're over Star Wars and Indiana Jones and that stuff. So it's kind of like, it could be good, but it's putting it in the hands of people that are pretty evil when it comes to any legal stuff, because they're the main reason that all the, like, you know, all of the extensions.
Your copyright extension. Copyright, because of Sonny Bono,
was all basically pushed by Disney.
I would be curious to see going down the road, and I apologize to the callers on hold, but this conversation is actually pretty interesting. And we'll get to your calls, I promise. One of the things that Disney is notorious for is litigation in terms of their copyright. So what will happen? How aggressively will they go after the fan base? Or
the thing is, Lucas is already aggressive. I mean, Lucas's lawyers definitely were already aggressive. But Disney is, I think up a notch.
A factor of 10 more aggressive. I mean, yeah, so as long as they don't buy The Simpsons. That would be really just the death knell for me. All right, so Epcot. Did you see that? Somebody put a picture on my Facebook of the Epcot Center redone with the Death Star.
Nice.
That was nice. Yeah. All right, so let's go to the phones.
All righty.
Let me mention this, somebody sent me a message that he read the whole story that we had, you know, that Bloody Hook story that I posted that I read on the air. I posted on my Facebook wall, and it got posted originally to the Technology Bites page. And Rockabilly James Moody said, "I just sat here reading your entire post to my wife. She was sitting at the edge of the couch with her mouth wide open until I said, 'A bloody hook.' And she said, 'Screw you.' I thought you were for real. I said, 'Really?' And she was mumbling under her breath walking outside." Best Halloween ever. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the Halloween show, we're going to speak with Smokey.
Smokey!
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
How's the bandit?
I was really looking into getting the Nexus 4, but then once I realized I wasn't going to get the LTE, that was a real deal breaker for myself. So I'm looking at still possibly getting it, but my first question is, I know that one of you guys has been on AT&T, and so it's going to be GSM only. What speeds are HSPA plus? I mean, what down speeds can I look at?
Deja vu, Dwight.
Yeah, this question was asked before the show earlier. I've gotten speeds as high as 24 megabits down on HSPA plus in some places in Houston.
T-Mobile.
On the iPhone 5, when you can't get to LTE, I've probably maxed out on AT&T's HSPA Plus at about 5 or 6. In most cases with the T-Mobile phones I've tried, it's like 8, 9, 10, which is, you know, none of it is bad, but it doesn't match LTE, which does. I've gotten over 40 megabits down with LTE.
Okay. Well, that's not really too unreasonable because for myself, I work in a chemical plant inside an explosion-proof building. So right now I have Sprint, and I'll do a speed test, and it won't even register it sometimes. I'll get over 200 ms for my ping. And it's just the phone becomes unusable inside that building.
Well, listen, we got to take a short break to do our top of the hour stuff. If you want to keep talking about this, we can put you on hold and come back to you after the top of the hour.
Sure, that sounds great. Right, or I can do it off air if you don't mind.
All right. Well, okay. Call us after.
Put them on hold, huh? Right now.
Yeah, we'll put you on hold. We got to. All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
The 23rd annual Blues for Food takes place on Sunday, November the 11th at Houston's oldest blues club, the Shakespeare Pub. This is an all-day blues festival and food drive featuring up-and-coming bands mixed with the legends of blues, Houston style. This year's lineup features Milton Hopkins and Jewel Brown, the Mighty Orc, Burt Wills, Don Cassie, Annika Chambers and the House Earls Band, Sonny Boy Terry Band, and others, topped off with Sparetime Murray's world-famous Blues Jam. The Shakespeare Pub is located at 14129 Memorial Drive at Kirkwood. All proceeds benefit the Houston Food Bank. Admission is any non-perishable food items or cash. A free plate of barbecue comes with your donation. It's family-friendly. There'll be door prizes and a silent auction. There will also be a Blues for Food drop-off point right here at KPFT, located at 419 Lovett Boulevard. So bring a sack of groceries through November 11th on behalf of Blues for Food.
KPFT is supported in part by the West University Baha'i Community. A moment of reflection from the Baha'i Writings. Be generous in prosperity and thankful in adversity. Be worthy of the trust of thy neighbor and look upon him with a bright and friendly face. Be a treasure to the poor, an admonisher to the rich, an answerer of the cry of the needy, a preserver of the sanctity of thy pledge. For more information, call 1-800-22-UNITE or visit www.bahai.org. That's www.bahai.org. KPFT Houston.
All right, we're back with Technology Bites. We have no Barrett time for some reason.
I tried to warn you about those dulcimers.
You played it.
They stole Barrett time.
They memory hold it. All right, so we're going to go back to our call, Smokey, on line two. Smokey, sorry about that.
Hey, no big deal, no big deal. I guess my next question was going to be about Google Voice. I've already got my Google Voice number, which is the same as my Sprint number. So if I leave Sprint, what's going to end up happening? Do I have to tell everybody my new number, or is Google Voice...
Google Voice follows you, but when you say that your Sprint number is the same as your Google Voice number, what do you mean by that? Usually you've got a Google Voice number that Google Voice issues you, and then you've got like your actual, you know, assigned phone number for the phone, and then you link the two. You link your device, you know, your phone, to the other number, and that way when, you know, people call your Google Voice number, it comes through to your handset, that number. So...
Okay, see, what Sprint has got a little deal with Google is that you can have the exact same number as your Google number. That's just the thing that Sprint has. And I installed it once, but then I ended up getting, like, double messages because it was going through Google Voice and also Sprint, so I just disabled it right away. So I don't use it, but when I change carriers, when somebody calls me, am I going to be able just to pick up that phone call?
You can do one of two things. It looks like you can port your existing number, or you can choose a new Google number.
Okay. And I would want to keep the same number, just being that that's like my number I've had for over 12 years. So
you can do it, but it looks like it may cost you maybe, you know, $15-$20 or somewhere if you're talking prices in that range. But you can do it via Google Wallet. But,
okay.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I just got there by Sprint port Google Voice, and it's the first hit on the support Google page.
Uh-huh. One thing, by the way, that I was thinking about your discussion about Sprint and being in that in the building at work where you get virtually no signal.
Femtocell?
Well,
right.
No. If you switch to a GSM, particularly the AT&T uses some frequencies in the Houston area that can get through pretty thick buildings. In addition, LTE does very good getting through thick structures. I have done speed tests using LTE with my iPhone in the elevator at the Houston Chronicle and come up with 30 megabits down.
Wow.
In an elevator. So if you want to stay connected within that structure you're in at work, LTE is probably your best bet. But what you should do is try to find some of your friends who have LTE phones and see what they're getting.
Let's see. Well, my coworkers are so untechy. I'm like the only tech person there. They ask me everything about computers, phones, and this and that. And there's nobody that has an LTE device. With my coworkers, there's just 9 of us at a time. And I finally talked to one guy that I found out he had T-Mobile, and he can't even make a phone call inside that building. And I haven't found anybody with on AT&T an LTE phone.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because the Nexus 4 doesn't have LTE anyway.
Right. Well, yeah, if that's the phone you settled on, then, yeah, that's your, you know, that isn't an issue. But the Nexus 4 will either talk to AT&T or T-Mobile, and you see what the T-Mobile connection is like.
Right. Right. Well, the other thing, too, is I'm kind of considering also is going ahead and going with Verizon and just getting last year's Nexus model. I'm just so dead set on getting a Nexus model, period, that's just for me to decide, I guess, later on.
Mm-hmm.
I really do appreciate y'all's time, guys.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
Y'all have a good one.
All right.
Oh, I have one other concern. I'm sorry. If we could get somebody in the Department of Transportation to move these deer signs? It's really annoying me.
Somebody follows me on Facebook. All right, thanks for your call.
Yep. Later on.
Did you hear that? That was a great radio story. Apparently this woman called into a radio talk show, and she's been trying to get people to pay attention to her concern that there's deer crossings, or she's been in three accidents involving deer on the road, and she feels that because the city puts the deer crossings in major throughways, you know, major highways, this is causing a problem for the drivers. And if they would just move these to, like, maybe where there's a school crossing or something, the deer could cross more safely.
Because the deer are, like, choosing to cross at those designated crossing places on the road.
As if the deer looks, oh, here's where I'm supposed to cross. Okay, here I go. Yeah, that's a great one. All right.
Who's rustling their Halloween bag in there?
That's me and my Kleenex, my makeshift Kleenex.
Oh, okay.
I thought Starbucks somebody napkin. Had
candy.
No.
Nose candy.
Nose candy.
713.
No.
I was flashing back. The 80s called. They want their drugs back.
Yeah, really.
I was, all right.
Nosedive.
Man, hold your hair. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us here
it's
tonight.
Just Plutonium Nyborg.
What?
Heavy Metal. The movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's yeah, John Candy and I think it's Harold Ramis voiced the two characters.
Yeah.
The big smiley spaceship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plutonium Nyborg.
I just have to get high to remember that movie.
Ew.
All right, so 713-526-5738. Who's up, Groovehouse?
Up next on the Halloween episode of Technology Bites, it's Ray.
Your one-way ticket to midnight.
That's right.
Welcome to the show, Ray.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Hey, hope everything's going well for you guys. But I had a couple of questions. Just the backup and the backup concept, I don't understand that. What if you do a backup on a CD or a little flash drive, what's going to get backed up?
Well, it depends on how you set the backup to happen. There's backups where it just copies certain files, like your documents and your music and so forth. And then there are backups that will back up the whole operating system and all of your installed applications.
Okay.
So the idea is that you back your system up in case anything happens to it.
I understand that, but what's recommended, the whole system?
Well, it depends. Again, some people would, you know, for me, let me just talk about myself in particular.
That's fair.
For me, if my computer, I back up just my documents. I back up the files that cannot be reinstalled by reinstalling the operating system or reinstalling the application, because I already have those on disk.
Okay.
And when it's time for me to reload my system, either because my hard drive has crashed or I just feel like it's time to reload my system, I'd rather just install the operating system, get it all set up, install the applications I'm going to use, and then move my documents over.
Okay.
That's very time-consuming, and not everybody likes to do that.
Right.
Some people might say, you know, my computer's crashed. I need to be back up and running lickety-split.
Right.
If I have a mirror of my computer in a pristine state with all the applications installed and all the documents and files in place, then I restore from there, and I'm back up and running in an hour or less.
So you can do actually either one, actually just save the files and
you can do it either way. You can choose to back up the entire computer lock, stock, and barrel so that, you know, if the computer was crashed, you could be back up and fully functional within a matter of hours, or you can do it where you say, look, I'm just doing this to protect my files.
All right.
If it comes down to it and I need to reinstall my system, I'll take the time and I'll install the OS and I'll dig out the Microsoft Office disks and I'll install those. And
now, if you go to the backup menu or whatever, will it do it automatically? It's going to ask you, what do you want to back up?
Yeah, depending on the backup software, you have different options on how you want to back it up. If you want to make a mirror image of your entire system, or if you want to just get your user-specific files.
And you can do that on a flash drive or something?
I wouldn't do it on a flash drive. My personal opinion on flash drives is that they tend to be made rather cheaply. The drive material is actually good, but the components that surround that tend to break down. So you could back up to a flash drive, and first of all, you could lose it real easily, but they do go bad. I only use flash drives for taking files from one computer to another, taking files home. I would get an external hard drive to do it.
External hard drive like a CD or something?
No, I would get an external hard drive.
Oh, okay.
You could do it to a CD, but one of the things that I... First of all, it would take multiple DVDs to back up an entire system.
Okay.
If you do it to an external hard drive, the files are much more accessible to you, and it's easier and faster. Okay. Otherwise, you're changing out disks. You know, you might take you 5 to 10 DVDs to back up an entire system and only one external hard drive.
All right. That makes sense. One more question. Late emails. I'm getting emails like a day late or something. Is that something that would be my email provider or the server or something? Do you have any idea about that?
When they show up, is it the date stamp of when the email was sent, or is it like, does it give it the date stamp of when
you
just received it?
Well, it's got the stamp of the day before. And I've had people tell me, oh, I emailed you this, and then it doesn't show up till the next day or something.
Who do you use for email?
Huh?
Who do you use for email?
Well, I use my my website provider, but also it's Sprint that goes through. But originally I thought it was my email provider, but they tell me that everything's working on their end.
What program do you use to check
Outlook?
Do you have Outlook set up to constantly check for new email, or do you have to hit send and receive?
Well, I've got other emails accounts that are set up already, and those come out okay, but it's just one particular email account that's running late.
Well, if it's only happening to one account, then there might be an issue either with the way that you've got that configured. Do you get new emails in all the time, or do you only just get a batch of new emails?
It just seemed like lately it started going again, but that was after I investigated with the email provider and stuff, and it seemed like it started coming around again, but it doesn't seem like I'm getting all the emails.
I would send myself some test messages from some of your other accounts to that account and see what happens.
All right.
And if that will let you tell you, it sounds to me, it could be either way. It could be a problem with your provider. If their mail is backing up, then it's not getting to your mail store in a timely fashion. Or it could be that your mail program is only checking sporadically for new messages.
Okay. But another thing, too, is I did a little Google search on the thing, and it said there was the actual provider of the Internet service. But that makes sense to you? Because, I got two other email services that they're coming through and on time, but one is not. So do you think I should just go ahead and reload, get rid of that account and just reload it up again or something? Was that
you mean like in Outlook? Like delete the account and reconfigure
it?
You could do that, or you could load another email program onto your system to check that account specifically and see if it does any better.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, you can configure in Outlook how often it checks.
How often it pulls for new email. And if Outlook goes into offline mode, for example, if it doesn't sense that there's an internet connection, it may go into offline mode. I don't know if that's true for POP or not, but I know for Exchange, but I think it's true for POP. If it doesn't know that it's online and to query for new messages, then your inbox may be stagnant for a while, and then you'll shut down the computer and you'll restart it, and you'll start Outlook, and all of a sudden a bunch of new messages will come in. And if you do that once a day, then everything's going to be kind of a day late. Mm-hmm. So the one thing you might try is to make sure in Outlook, not Outlook Express, but in Outlook, if you're saying for sure it's Outlook 2003 or 7 or 10 or something like that, there's an option in the menu system to send and receive all accounts. So you might try manually having it go out and get your mail and see if it's actually pulling it down. The other thing to do is if that mail provider has a web interface where you can check your mail using the web, go there and see if your mail seems to be showing up there in real time, and that would point to your client having an issue. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. If you want to be on the air, I see we have a call in the queue, but we have plenty of open lines and plenty of time, and we're not begging for money. We're just begging that if you pledge, do you actually pay? And we'll remind you of that a couple more times tonight, maybe, and then over the course of the next several weeks in the Geek Gathering and yada yada. 713-526-5738. 713-526-BloodyHook. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next on the Halloween episode, it's Don.
Don!
How are you? I've got a Dell with brains out of its computer eating out.
Ah!
It's no brain.
No brain in your Dell. It's
no,
the Dell from
the
hell.
Zombies got it.
Who?
The zombies.
The zombies?
Yeah.
Zombies don't eat Dells.
They don't?
No.
Zombie processes could.
Okay. Anyway, I've got an Inspiron 531S. I had some problems ongoing. I never went online with the machine. I've had it 3 or 4 years. And so I never ran the Service Pack 3 on it. And I started getting these keyboard errors. And I plug in a new keyboard, it doesn't make any difference. And then it got to the point where I had to reboot 3, 4, 5, 6 times before it boot up to my password. And then this guy who I thought knew something told me to reinstall XP over the top of it, and that really jacked everything up. So I'm getting error message dumping files now, and I wanted to get something and just wipe the hard drive off and try to reinstall the software and start all over again. And I went to Fry's and got some kind of Olo or something like that.
The Olo.
Yeah, that. So I tried to install it, and I had the key on it, and I can't even get online with a computer because it's messed up, so you have to register that online before you can use the product. So I was very disappointed in that. Of course, Fry's won't take it back. And the people hung up at me at Olo or whatever it is. So I guess I wasn't very nice about it. But anyway, what is your suggestion on it? Is it?
Well, right now you've got a computer that you can't get booted up, right?
Well, I can do it in safe mode, but I can't safe mode with networking because it won't.
Right, I understood. At least if you can get it up in safe mode, means that you can connect up an external hard drive and copy off your files. Do you have anything on the computer that you care about?
Well, I already pulled some files off of it.
So do you have what you want off of there?
Yeah, pretty much. The rest of it, I just software and I just reinstall it.
All right. Then what I would do you say it's a Dell, right?
Right.
Did you make the recovery disks when you bought it, or did it come with the recovery disks?
It did, but I've tried to install those, and it just doesn't seem to take them.
Now, you know, you have to boot from that disk.
And what's the process to boot from?
So what you do in a Dell is you take the first disk of your recovery CDs and you put it in the CD drive of the computer. Mm-hmm. You turn the computer off. And then you turn it back on. And there's, I think it's F12 to bring up the boot, the one-time boot menu.
Right.
And that gives you the option to choose to boot from the CD or DVD. And then you boot from that disk, and it should walk you through reinstalling, you know, wiping the computer clean, and then reinstalling the original software that came with the computer when you bought it.
Okay. So, and there's like 4 disks. So
right. So it'll prompt you. It'll say, you know, it's done with disk 1. It'll prompt you for the next disk, and you'll open the disk tray and put the other disk in and click OK, and it'll continue.
The problem is it doesn't have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey, because you didn't label them?
Well, I didn't know. That's
all right.
I never looked at them.
Well, then you're going to have to kind of do the process of elimination.
Okay.
And start with one disk and see if you can boot from it. It may detect it and say this is not the first disk of the set. Insert disk 1. And you just keep going through. And, you know, just remember that when you put a disk in the drive and you close that door, it takes it about 20 seconds or 30 seconds for the computer to realize that the disk is there and get a read on it. So you need to give it a second to get set and then try.
Okay. I also tried that Olo or something. I went online with another computer and made a boot disk, but I can't even get it to function in the Dell.
It's a boot floppy or CD?
A CD.
Did you try the F12 to boot from CD?
I think I did, but I'll try that.
Try it and make sure, but how old is the computer?
About 3 or 4 years old.
Dell also has a boot partition. There might be a recovery option if you hit that F12 to run from the recovery partition to be able to restore the computer back to the factory specs.
Okay.
If you if you Google search your Dell, the words Dell and then the model number, and then, you know, recovery disks or restore computer or something, you should be able to find some instructions on how to do it.
Okay.
All right?
Good suggestion. Thank you. Oh, what do y'all think of that Galaxy S3 phone?
Great phone.
Yeah. Groovehouse has it.
Excellent.
Right?
Awesome.
I had a friend. She bought one and brought it over, and she's sitting there not very literate with, I mean, not very literate with all these things, and she was having a time trying to figure out all the bells and whistles on it.
Well, there's a lot of bells and there's a lot of whistles.
So is there some place she can go to, or just go to the whoever she, T-Mobile, and just let them walk her through it, or what's the best option for that?
They might do it. I don't know how helpful. I mean, T-Mobile's very interested in keeping their customers right now with the iPhone being out and all, but
when you go, if you go to a T-Mobile store, you know, it may be hit or miss as you find somebody who knows anything about it.
Right. The other thing is you can go online. YouTube has lots of videos on tricks and shortcuts for the Galaxy S3. There's tutorials. The phone came with a book. Start with the manual and that came with the phone.
I mean, okay. Part of it is understanding what it is you want to do in the first place.
Well, she doesn't even know what to do with it.
Well, I mean... Well, as long as she can make calls, you know,
all she wants to do is get on the internet, basically.
Well, it should have a web browser built in, so that.
Yeah. She had a hard time setting up the email with it, though.
Really?
Well, there's all those three. There's Microsoft thing, and there's IMAP, and some other thing.
I mean, the best thing to do is to have a Gmail account, and then just use Gmail on the phone.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, with the Android phone, it really integrates very nicely with Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get Gmail, set up a free Gmail account, you have your calendar, and so you get all your reminders on the phone and that kind of stuff. So it might be something she wants to look into.
Yeah.
But if she's trying to configure another account, like a Yahoo account or something, or Bell account or something, if you Google search configure Android Yahoo Mail or Hotmail or whatever, they'll tell you how to do it. You'll find instructions on how to do it.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for all your help.
Oh, no problem. Bye. Thanks for your call. All right, so all of our calls. Poof.
Dun, dun, dun.
Disappeared to a bloody hook.
713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, I see a call. Thanks for that call coming in. Coming in to talk to Groovehouse, get screened. And so I was just reading, I commented on my Facebook after Barrett said it. I said, Attack of the Zombie Processes, and go with the Geek Halloween hashtag. And, Barrett, of course, is kill-hup space ps-a ostat.
All the zombie processes.
All the zombie processes. Is that what that is? Is that like the...
Yeah, it's a kill, and it finds like that PS. It says, give me a process list, and anything that starts with a Z or a, like, you know, with the zombie, it returns that process ID, and then it kills it with the signal 9, which is that HUP's hang up, like without remorse. It's like a headshot. Double tap.
That's going to be a tweet now. With a hashtag of geek double tap. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites right now, Groovehouse is screening a call. Screening a call. The call is coming from within the station. Yes, all right. So now Groovehouse has... Oh, and they hung up. Oh, no.
It's good. It's good.
It is good.
How's it will be good.
How's it going to be good?
It'll be good next week. Come hungry.
We need calls now.
Was that Chef Ray?
Come hungry next week.
Come hungry next week.
Yes.
For brains?
I'm always hungry for this week. Brains. That's tonight.
Okay.
Next week. No, good stuff is coming next week. We're getting pizza on the show.
Which we won't eat in the
spoiler.
Studio. Spoiler
right,
alert.
Right. We won't.
Spoiler alert.
We won't eat it in the studio, but we will have it.
With the mics on.
How come when I try to, like, type your name in Twitter, you don't show up? And, you know, it gives you that suggested list and tweet deck of people. You start to type a Twitter name, but your name never
Me?
Shows up. Yes.
I'm a ninja.
Are you a Twitter ninja? It's one. It's two ends. It's two ends in canon, separated by an O.
No, just BCANON.
Are you using the web page?
No, I'm using TweetDeck.
Well, now, which TweetDeck? The original TweetDeck?
No, the newest. The newest one. Yeah.
Which newest one?
The. All right, 713-526-5738. If you're going to be on the air with us here tonight,
I don't really know how it determines that. Because I do that. Like, every once in a while, I want to reference somebody.
And sometimes, you know, you start typing, they tons of them pop up, and then they whittle down. And then sometimes I know what it is, and it will not bring it up as an option. But then if I go, like, search for them and find them and then go back to start do the autocomplete, it's like they have to have tweeted or been in the system within a certain amount of time relative
I guess maybe because Barrett doesn't ever tweet.
Yeah. I've got Echo Phone, and I see that same thing now. He's showing up right now in Echo Phone, but
every time I struggle to remember how to spell, and I notice it with Barrett specifically because I can never remember if there's three N's or two.
Two cumulatively, but that gets confusing because, you know, then people think, well, two together.
No, two separately.
Two all day.
I always have to remember non,
as in Pockables.
Or Canon, just like, well, how does the Canon spell their stuff?
Like the camera or the gun?
Like the non-Sony one.
Dwight just Jay just ignores
the that's Canon. That's what I'm saying.
Just think not Sony.
Oh, yeah, Sony.
He's got a block.
He's got a what?
You got a block.
Yeah, it's like the camera. Canon. Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Now, you know, what you ought to do is change your last name to Sony and you're in.
Ooh.
Just change your name to Pentax. Sony. Or all right, 713-526-5738. Looks like Groovehouse already has a call screened, ready to go.
Yes, we do.
All right, who is it?
Up next on the Halloween show, it's Jacob.
Jacob!
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
It's Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. How's the ladder?
Well, it looks like I got the blue screen of death on my my desktop.
Is it the blue screen of death, or is it the blue screen of the living dead?
Yeah, pretty much. My computer starts up, it goes to Windows, and then right after about 2 minutes, then boom, it turns blue and tells me that there's possibly a hardware issue, that it's a Windows System 32 file that, you know, Windows protects it and turns it off. Basically, I was wondering if y'all had any suggestions.
Does it give you any text in that, in terms of it? So it says it detected a failure, or if you change.
Yeah, correct.
Does it have a stop error code in it?
Yeah, I'm driving at the moment. Yeah. That's how I caught y'all's show, and I was like, I'm gonna ask these guys.
Typically, those kind of things tend to point to a hardware failure, like with your memory,
right?
Possibly bad memory or something else going on. There, you can actually take the stop error code and write it down and type that into a Google search.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was.
You won't be able to remember it because it's like, you know, 0x83 blah blah blah. It's a, it
oh, that, okay, yeah, it did give me some. That's right. It was like a 001B. Right. Something to that effect.
It may also be a driver issue. So, for example, if you recently updated your video or sound card drivers, that kind of thing can also.
I put a new graphics card in it.
Yeah.
And did you use the did you get the most recent drivers for it?
Well, not see. Basically, it's I was souping up my boss's computer for him, basically, and I have a bunch of hand-me-down stuff. He has an older computer, and I was using all my, you know, I just have parts laying around, and I was putting it all together for him. And
did you download the latest drivers and install them?
No, of course
then
not.
Do that. That's your problem, probably.
So, basically, probably you should take it out.
Well, you could try updating the drivers for that video card. Go to the video card manufacturer's website and download the latest, greatest drivers available for it. That might clear it up.
Yeah, that might help.
Yeah, if you didn't install any drivers and you just put that
no,
in
No, I didn't.
Then that's your problem.
Yeah, before you take it out, find the drivers, and then if
that
works.
I can't. See, that's the thing. It doesn't even let me use the computer. It goes
I see what you're saying.
Straight
to
that blue screen. It goes straight to Windows had a failure. It shut it down for the safety of the computer.
Even if you try to go start it in safe mode?
Oh, you know what? I think it says you can. That's right. It says you can go to safe mode, so I might be able to do that.
You could do it.
The drivers,
once you have the drivers in hand, say on a flash drive, you should be able to go into safe mode. So if you can get into safe mode with networking, that will help.
Right. Right. Okay. That's a good idea. Then I can either that, or I can use my other computer and put it. You know, get the drivers for it. Then
right.
Stick them on there and upload it.
Right.
Cool. Okay, I think I'll try that. And, you know, I should have thought of that. But, you guys turned me from a regular Joe that doesn't know crap about computers to somebody who actually knows how to fix someone else's computer.
Wow.
So I love y'all's show.
We'll take the credit.
All right, well, thanks for your call. Good luck.
Hey, y'all have a happy Halloween.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
You can't put that on us. That's a curse in some circles.
Used to be a 110-pound weakling. Now I'm a computer super geek.
I'm making computers that blue screen for all my friends.
That's right.
I heard good. All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. I see Groovehouse screening a call. I'm going to steal all of Barrett's best lines for my new hashtag Geek Halloween.
That was a invisible caller.
Halloween prank call.
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Are we really getting prank calls? That would be sad.
I think someone left a flaming bag of packets on my front porch.
I think we got butt dialed.
Are you the gatekeeper?
There is no technology bites, only Zool. Are they getting butt dialed again? No, maybe not. All right, 713-526-5738. We've got about a half hour left in Technology Bites tonight. We have a Windows 8 machine. I have not had a single Windows 8 question in my... Oh, no. I take it back. I had my first Windows 8 support call today, in fact.
Really?
Yes.
A business support call?
A business support call. Because, you know, I work for a software company, and we have software developers. Right. And we write software for Windows. And so some of our developers take it upon themselves to deploy new and exciting operating systems like Windows 8. You know, not because they're, maybe because they're going to develop for it, but just because, you know.
Because like, they can.
Because they can and they're geeks. But what happens, unfortunately, with developers is that they get ahead of the curve or get ahead of the game by deploying for themselves an unsupported operating system. We have not had an opportunity really. Well, we haven't taken the opportunity, really, to play with Windows 8 in our current environment, mostly because I know it's going to break a lot of crap, because we got stuff right now that doesn't even work in Windows 7. I'm running virtualized Windows XP in some systems to just run some of our legacy applications. So we haven't chased that down, but those that take it upon themselves to go ahead and do it, then run into the problems that I knew we were going to have and submit help desk tickets or contact the IT department to say, well, I'm doing this and it doesn't work. So, yes, I had somebody do that today from our Seattle office. They installed themselves a Windows 8 computer and they downloaded the Cisco VPN client, which we have available. You know, it's a web interface. You go to a certain website, you log in with your domain credentials, and it downloads the Cisco VPN client onto your computer and allows you to make VPN connections to the network. That worked fine. But we also keep that client updated. So if you log in to the VPN and there's an update, it automatically updates. So, you know, you get the new one. Well, the update doesn't work in Windows 8. The old one does, but the update doesn't.
That's odd.
So the guy said, well, you know, is there a way to turn off the update? Which there's not. So we're not going to just, because we can't turn it off per user. We have to turn it off for everybody. I said, no, we're not going to turn it off. But we did get the white paper from Cisco that talks about, you know, their release notes for Windows 8. And they say you can run the new client, will work on Windows 8, but you have to be on a wired connection. It won't do it over wireless. You have to have whatever the top line.
But the previous one worked?
Yes. But the new one, we don't know that it worked. The update breaks. Mm-hmm. The automatic update goes in and says, oh, okay, you've got the older version. We're going to pull out these files, and we're going to add these files, and it crashes. Mm-hmm. And then that they're left with no VPN or remnants of a VPN client. So we don't know that the new one doesn't work necessarily because of the way that we deploy our VPN client. We don't provide just a physical installer. Here's the installer. Go install it. You have to actually...
The built-in Windows VPN doesn't work with your network?
I don't believe that it does. No, and on top of that, and while we're on the topic of VPN not working, the new VPN client for the Mac will not work in OS X 10.5. It'll work all the way up from there, but the last one worked in 10.5, but didn't work in...
Well, 10.5 is pretty far back.
Yes, well, the old client worked in 10.5, but it would not work in Mountain Lion, which is what, 10.7, 10.8. Would not work in Mountain Lion. And since most people have a Mountain Lion, we needed to get the new client. But the new client abandons 10.5. And so the guy with the Windows 8 problem also couldn't get connected with his Mac 10.5. He said, well, I'm not going to upgrade to 10.6 or 10.8 or whatever. So, well, that's your choice, but you're out of luck. So I sent him the white paper that we had on the Cisco client. So these are the steps you can try. But it's a best effort on our part because we don't support it.
Is he running it virtually? Is he running it native?
He's running it native, I'm pretty sure. I try to tell, you know, I'm not a developer myself, but I try to tell our developers that, you know, your best option if you want to play with new and exotic operating systems is to virtualize
it. Right.
Put it on a supported platform, and then you never have to worry about it. But people want to go ahead and blow away their entire operating system. They want to take a perfectly working computer and install Windows 8 on it. Yeah, take what you get. All right, Groove House. You still there? You still with us?
Yes. You rang.
Oh, hey, Dwight.
Oh, no, don't wake up Dwight.
No, I wanted him to give us some lurch.
No, I just did lurch.
Let's
have
do
two
lurch.
Lurches.
Lurch off.
No, lurch
no.
off.
No. We got to take a call.
Dwight can be cousin it.
Up next,
I'm Uncle Fester.
Put the light bulb in your mouth. Put the light bulb in your mouth.
Whoever's playing the part of the hand needs to stop right this second.
I ain't get either.
You spoke French.
The thing.
The thing.
Who was the hair one? Cousin it.
It was cousin it. Thing was the hand.
Thing was the hand. All right.
Right.
I'm sorry. Groove lurch.
Yes.
Awesome. Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Chris.
I feel like I run some kind of late night disco show.
Chris, you're on the air.
Chris, welcome to Technology Bites. How may we help you?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I love your show. I love your advice. It's good to listen to all those advice. It really helps people.
Thank you.
I just had a general question. What's better as far as performance is concerned, multi-core, lower-speed CPU or a higher-speed, let's say like a 2.6 gigahertz quad-core or like 3.6 gigahertz dual-core? What's better as far as performance?
What are you going to be using it for?
Just for regular surfing and documents. And
The dual core. So the deal is with this one, think of it kind of like bandwidth, or think of it as like workload. So you can either have a lot of slower workers, or you can have two very fast workers. So if you have like a ton of work to do, like a ton of database things to do, or like a ton of web requests coming in, or a whole bunch of like parallel work, you're going to want the slower processors, but more of them. But if you're not doing a lot of stuff that requires a lot of, you know, quote unquote manpower, you want two sprinters, and that's what your dual core system is going to be.
So let's say if you want like parallel application running at the same time, it's better to have multi-core so you do multi-test.
Yeah, and a good example of that would be like, you know, if you've got like a Linux server, any kind of servers that might have to like, you know, keep the basic operating system running and field database requests and do this and, you know, shuffle packets and do a whole bunch of things. What it does is it makes sure that there's always plenty of power. Now, it'll never go faster than, you know, the speed of the fastest core. But, you know, you can do a lot more in parallel. You can do a lot more work at the same time. So that's kind of what it comes down to. Usually server space, I would say, you know, more cores. If it's going to be for a home machine, you know, always more cores are better, but I'd say go for the faster box.
And also I read somewhere that, like, even having multiple cores, it doesn't really do you any good because, I mean, most of the software that I've written so far doesn't use
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You've got to be able to take advantage of it. So you're looking at like multi-threaded applications or like, you know, like SMP, like, you know, symmetric multi-core processing applications. So it's stuff that has to be written to take advantage of that. And usually it's only going to be server space kind of software where that really matters. So like I said, for home use, you know, you don't need that really.
Right. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Right,
have fun with
a
new machine.
Huh?
Have fun with a new machine.
I... I was trying to build a machine, and I just wanted to know, like, what's better.
No, he said have fun with it.
Have fun building the new machine.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks. Bye, Chris.
That's what you get.
I try. That's what you get for trying to be nice.
That's what you get for trying to engage them in conversations. He was just happy with himself for making it through the phone call, and then you just...
turned the tables on him.
Yeah, made it all personal and stuff. Scare the crap out of me. All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the Halloween show, we're going to speak with Mary.
Mary! Bloody Mary.
Mary, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Bloody Mary.
I wish I had one right now. I just bought a Toshiba laptop, and I just want to know if that was the right choice.
Is there a BIOS password?
Is it a good brand?
Well, I mean...
Which one?
What makes you think you might have made a bad choice?
Well, it was a television ad.
Television ad that you responded to. Did you buy it? Did they like? Was it like on the home shopping network?
It could be.
It's getting warmer.
It's better than Blue Hippo.
Yeah.
Well,
no, it was. It was home shopping.
Did you take now? Okay, if it's a modern new computer. And you got it for a good price, then you probably did okay. Did you check pricing on that computer at your like local stores to see if you got a good deal or not?
Or even just Google
don't.
It?
Don't unless you're prepared for bad news. I would say it's better not to know if the computer works. Don't think about price. Just have fun with the computer. Unless you can send it back.
Actually, I haven't, and that's probably why I haven't. I've got it, and it's still in the box. In case I hear bad things about it, I can just...
What model Toshiba is it?
I would have to open up the box. I don't remember.
I will say this, that if you don't know what you have and you bought it on a whim in the middle of the night while drinking Bloody Marys and watching the Home Shopping Network, you may not have done yourself a favor. One of the problems I would have with buying something on the Home Shopping Network like this is the support issue, is whether or not it comes with support from Toshiba or not, which it probably does, unless it's some kind of refurbished or clearance model or something.
But it's going to be phone support. It's not like if you take it out of the box, it doesn't work the first time. It's not like you've got a store you can take it back to or
right.
necessarily.
I'd point. Open the box, make sure it doesn't have a break.
How much did you pay for it?
$648.
So you bought a $650 laptop. There are good $650 laptops out there. It's possible.
And it has a 5-year support. It has Windows 8.
Oh. So it's a pretty modern new computer.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's new. If it's got Windows 8, it's new.
Okay.
It's probably fine. It probably comes with support from Toshiba.
Man, open that thing up.
Open it up. Let's get going.
Open it up, man. Let's start using it.
It has the benefit of being... You know, you have it. You have it right there. It's ready to go. It could be on the internet within the hour.
Windows 8 is really cool.
A computer in the hand is worth two
on the
QVC.
Network. Yeah.
So, did you ask yourself these questions when you bought it?
I'm sorry?
Did you ask yourself these questions when you bought it?
Well, I liked everything they said, and we moved recently, and our desktop died when we unplugged it and plugged it back in again.
Ah.
It just didn't work. And then the laptop we have is 5 years old. It's a Dell. And it is very, very slow. So,
well, without knowing the model of the Toshiba laptop, I can't tell you whether you necessarily got a good deal or not. Chances are you got a reasonable deal. You probably saved a little money because what they probably did is they probably got some, you know, bulk order or something that they could move at a reasonable price. But I don't do a lot of home shopping, do that stuff. It seems cheesy to me when I watch it.
Right.
It's like, you know, they're going to come on there and they're and they wear you down too. We've only got 13 of these units left, and they're really. Oh, and here's another call from a satisfied. Yeah, I just bought that on your show, and I'm really looking forward to getting it so I can get on the internet.
I love the color.
But so, if it's supposed to run Windows 8.
Then it's probably a good computer.
It should definitely be better than your 5-year-old dude.
Oh, it'll definitely be better than the broken computer that doesn't work, right?
Absolutely.
If it's a modern computer, even if it, let's just say maybe, and I'm not saying this is true, but just let's say maybe you managed to buy a $300 laptop for $650.
Probably not,
but let's just say you did. Let's say you have a $300 laptop that you paid too much for. That computer, even a $300 laptop on today's market, a modern $300, and they're out there, you can find them, is going to run circles around your 5-year-old laptop. It's just going to be a better computer all the way around. So the only question I would really have is whether or not you paid too much for the computer. And now, I would open it up and take a look at the model or get the invoice out, find the model. Go online and see how much you could buy that from direct from Toshiba or from Best Buy or from someplace like that. See if you're in that price range. If you're in that price range, great, keep it. But if you find out that you could go over to Fry's and pick it up for $100 or $200 cheaper, then return it.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. And I did open up the invoice. It's Toshiba 17.3. Laptop Intel Core 15.
Those are specs, but I need the model number.
Oh, 6 gig.
That's
GB. Like,
it'll be called a Toshiba Satellite.
See, I was going to say, one of the things sometimes some of the home shopping things do is they either they don't put the model number anywhere where it's really easy to find, like in their invoice stuff, or they get like special versions of things, and so the models numbers actually don't match anything you can buy in any normal stores.
Right. That was particularly true.
So sometimes you have to go by the specs to try to figure it out.
But it sounds like it has 6 gigs of RAM, which is good.
What was the processor on it?
What was the question?
Did it say something about like an i5 or an i-something processor, Intel processor with some numbers?
Oh, Intel Core. It's a crease here. Intel Core. It's either what, 15 or i5.
i5.
Okay.
And it's RAM 750 GB HD.
For 648 running Windows 8. Do you know it's not a touch screen, is it? Do you know?
Oh, I don't think so.
All right. I would say probably you got a decent deal on that.
Yeah, it looks like the Toshiba satellites with the i5 processors from places like Buy.com or Tiger Direct run anywhere from about 550 to 750.
And this is a 17-inch model, so it's going to be on the higher end.
Yeah, so it's a 17-inch, so that's you got more screen real estate. So that is, Dwight's right, you'd be on the higher end of those. So you probably bought the laptop for about what it's worth, would be my guess.
About what it's worth, $650.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you got a steal or a great, great deal. You probably paid what you would expect to pay for that computer.
Now, do you know much about Windows 8?
No.
Well, Windows 8 has two interfaces, two desktops. One of them, it looks like pretty much the Windows desktop you know and love. The other one is a bunch of colored tiles, and the programs that run on one side don't run on the other side of it. And you have to flip back and forth, so you expect a learning curve for it.
Do you see a model number that might say P875 or something, or P something? Or champagne silver, or...
P875372...
Hold on. P875...
Yeah, the other numbers are going to be part of the...
Can I have them?
P875-37200.
And I've almost got it unwrapped. I'm trying the model number. I'm not finding a P875, but I found a P875S7200. That was sold. That's a similar model that was sold by Best Buy for around $700. It's a discontinued model, so I'm guessing you probably paid about what the thing is worth.
Mm-hmm.
They may have been like just on the back end of like a new model came out, and so Toshiba dumped them and they stopped making them. So the price before they stopped that model was whatever, you know, $700 or whatever. So they probably purchased them in bulk for a cheaper price and then dropped the price from the original a little bit. But still made money themselves.
So should I be afraid that I won't be able to get in touch with Toshiba if something breaks on it or part of the 5-year warranty? Or
I would read through your documentation. I mean, I don't want to scare you too bad on that. I think it's probably going to be fine. But you know, the level that you seem to be operating at in terms of computers sounds to me like you would benefit more. And this is maybe more for the benefit of people tuning in who haven't bought a computer on the Home Shopping Network yet. there's a great benefit in my mind to the consumer, and I'm not a consumer guy, but when I do think about it, I think I come up with some reasonable concepts. For someone who is not particularly tech savvy, doesn't really know what they're looking at when they look at the specs on a computer, that sort of thing, I find those people have a better experience if they buy the computer from a box store, like a Best Buy or a Fry's or something, because ultimately, if you just get so frustrated and lost in all of this, you can walk into that store and get someone to help you. Here you have a computer that you bought from the Home Shopping Network. They sell all kinds of stuff. They sell jewelry. They sell pottery. They sell whatever electronics.
Coins, knives, swords.
They're not going to be able to help you. They will tell you whether you can return it or not.
That's true.
But I would guess that if they're selling Toshiba products, in order to be a licensed Toshiba product seller, it has to come with the Toshiba warranty. But I would want to check that. I want to see if the support contract that you have on the laptop is through Toshiba or if it's through a third party, because I know you can buy electronics. Like I bought a camera lens from a gray market dealer in China. It did not come with the manufacturer's warranty because it was gray market from China. They sold it with a third party warranty service that promised to back that product up, which is good and it's fine, but it's not a manufacturer's warranty. So you have they're harder to tell if those particular companies are any good or not. So what I would want to know, and you're going to have to look into your paperwork and to find this out, is if your warranty is through Toshiba or if it's through a third party. And if it's through a third party, and you're going to have to find out if that third party is worth a darn or not.
Okay, because everything I see has Toshiba on it.
It's probably through Toshiba.
I bet it is.
It's probably
a
new laptop.
But chances are, it's a new laptop, and it's going to be fine.
But
so
typically, a laptop comes with a 1-year warranty.
Right.
So the fact that this has more than a 1-year warranty tells me that it's quite possibly that maybe it's the first year is through Toshiba. And like a Best Buy extended warranty, you've got an extended warranty.
Well, at least it's covered.
But you should be able to pull out some warranty documentation if you dig into it deep enough.
Well, I'm working on it. I've almost got it undone here, but I did find a quick start satellite Pro P870 series.
Okay.
P870.
We got to move on. We got a couple other calls we got to get before we wrap the show up here. We're coming up.
You're in good shape, though. Yeah,
power that thing up and use it.
Yeah, just have a good time.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Have fun tonight.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
I'm surprised she even got up the courage to order the damn thing the way she was so...
Oh, Dwight. Dwight, come on, man. Come on. She's got Windows 8, dude.
This coming from the man who has no tolerance for people who forget their BIOS passwords.
He's just cocky because he got a Surface.
All right.
Groove House, who's up?
Speed round on the Halloween show. We're going to speak to Richard.
Richard, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
How you doing? Okay, my problems, my service is through AT&T and I got DSL service. I'm in the middle of, when I'm working or doing whatever I'm doing on the internet, all of a sudden it tells me I've lost DSL contact. That, you know, some reason or another, it fails to hook up to the DSL, whether it's hooked up by wire or wireless.
So Hello? You lose your DSL contact if you're connected to wire or wireless.
Right.
Have you called your DSL provider?
Yes, I have, and they've been out twice, and that's fine for a little while, probably a day or so, and then it goes back. The same problems.
Have they replaced the modem?
I've had to replace the modem before, and still.
But in this instance, have they replaced the modem?
They did once. The other times, I've had to dish out the money myself, replace it myself.
You had to replace it yourself. But in your current set of problems, have you replaced the modem?
No. Because I replaced the modem a little over a year ago.
And it's yours now, so.
Yeah. And, it's still a AT&T modem. Okay, I mean, I went and bought a new one. But, because I'm told that's the only way I can get my system to work. And I still continue having the same problem.
Have you had them check, they check the outside line and your inside lines?
Yep. I've gotten new filters twice in the last year.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still having intermittent problems.
Do your neighbors have AT&T have problems?
I don't know if they do or not.
Find some neighbors who have AT&T DSL and ask if they're having problems. If it's in your neighborhood, that will tell you. If it's not, then it's confined to your house and something in your system. Is your house old?
No, it's a new house. That's 6 years old.
6 years old? So it's probably not the wiring inside the house, although it could be.
Do they give you those filters where you hook up your DSL modem to a particular wall jack?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried any of your other jacks?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this time we transferred it to another one.
Well, I think that's going to be a little bit beyond our ability to resolve on this show. I would stay on AT&T.
Keep on them, yeah. Don't give up. Keep on them.
Oh, okay.
All right, thanks for your call. I'm sorry we got to cut you short there, but, that sounds to me like you've got... Did you mention if you tried other computers on it?
But it's the connection at the thing,
yeah.
One last call. The last call on the Halloween show. It's Gina.
Gina, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks. How are y'all doing?
Good. Real quick, what can we do for you?
I have moved back to Texas from Georgia, and I found myself out in the boonies, I'm dying with no internet connection. Right now, I'm using a hotspot on my AT&T phone.
Yeah.
But it's rather frustrating and kind of slow. What are my best options out here as far as a decent internet connection?
Have you checked into whether or not DSL is available in your area?
I have with HughesNet, and it said no.
Okay.
How far in the boonies? Like what part of, how far out?
Really not that far. I'm not far from Huntsville. I'm close to Richards.
Check with a company called Clear.
Clear does not. I had Clear where I lived before, and they don't service this area.
Who is there a cable television provider?
Yeah, HughesNet.
HughesNet, and they're not cheap.
Try satellite.
Satellite might be an
satellite
option.
Satellite internet.
Yeah.
It's not
who
perfect
provides your landline service?
All I have is the cell phone, so I don't even know who the local
Dish is doing internet. Now, aren't they?
Yeah, satellite.
You can check into satellite.
Check out Dish Internet.
HughesNet also does satellite, which is weird.
Yeah,
I thought for sure I could get satellite, but then when HughesNet came back, no, I thought,
get satellite anywhere that has a. We're out of time, unfortunately. If you want to contact us offline, we'll see if we can point you some other directions. But sorry, we're out of time.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. One of my coworkers actually wrote code to create zombie processes and then used your command to
kill them. Did it work? Did my command work? It was untested.
Somebody challenged you on yours and said that why don't you just use kill-9? He said no, kill-hup is the best way to do it because kill-9 will actually create another zombie.
Vindication! All right, we got a geek gathering this weekend.
Geek gathering on Friday. Go to geekradio.com for details. And,
That's it.
We'll see you next week for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Jesus.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Beware of zombies. Watch out for little kids, too.
...2012 is a big election year, not just for the country, but for KPFT. Hi, I'm General Manager Dwayne Bradley. Listener members will receive ballots later this year to elect fellow listener members to our board of directors. The board has a variety of tasks assigned to it. You'll get a chance to know each of the candidates in the coming weeks in the hope you choose the best people for a big job. KPFT is required by its national infrastructure to air statements from any candidate for the board, as well as elections discussions featuring those candidates. As in any elections, candidates will say a lot to get your vote. Listen carefully, do your research, and make an informed decision. Visit KPFT.org for complete information about our board elections, schedule of events, and more, and stay tuned for notices as the process continues. Your vote matters. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
This is KPFT Program Director Ernesto Aguilar with two brief announcements. First, thank you so much for your pledges of support during this recent membership campaign.